Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another show of At Home with Victoria, with your host, Victoria Gaither, and co-host, Michael Kay.
Evening, everybody. Welcome to another edition of At Home with Victoria. I am Michael Kay, your entertainment co-host for tonight. The news lady is actually away today, so it's just going to be me, and our guest of the hour is Robert Malone, artist, actor, most known for The Journey, The Soul Jumper, and The Green Mile with Tom Hanks. And he'll be going ahead, and I'm thrilled. This is an At Home with Victoria exclusive. He doesn't grant interviews at all. This is his first and last one for the year, and I'm absolutely a fan, and I'm honored to have him with us tonight. But before we get going, we're going to go ahead and listen to a little bit of music to get us in the mood. This is Anna Johnson with Someday. When we get back, Robert Malone is going to be in the house. Don't go away.
Four.
Facebook / Anna Johnson, and also on Reverb Nation. And Robert, now joining the show. Welcome to At Home with Victoria, Robert Malone. I thought that song was applicable because I'm curious to know how a little guy from Huntsville, Alabama, made it all the way to the big city of L.A. So welcome to the show, buddy. How are you?
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Michael K. You want to go by Michael or Michael K.?
Honey, you can call me Susan. It doesn't matter. I mean, absolutely. Michael K. is fine. Michael's good.
Sounds good, Mike. I like, how about MK? I like MK.
MK's a moniker that's catching on, absolutely. So
yeah.
Feel free.
I'm actually doing pretty good. I'm in San Diego right now visiting some friends, and L.A. is a fun little animal. And it's been a fun road for this little guy from Huntsville, Alabama, to come all the way to the big city of Hollywood. And, you know, it's been a fun journey. Definitely, that's why it's very apropos. One of my films was called The Journey.
Yeah, absolutely. And that did actually quite well. That was back in 2007 you did that.
Yeah, it was a little short. I was actually very excited to work with some kids from, I was at the time in Nashville, Tennessee. My mother was very ill, and she was passing a couple of years down the road. I didn't know when, but I wanted to stay close to home, and I basically wrote some screenplays in Nashville, Tennessee for a while. Ran across a guy, which was very exciting. I worked with none other than Mel Coleman. He is Lou Costello's cousin. Wrote with him for about a year. I introduced him to my package. It was the first package I'd sent out as a writer to him, and I was working on a thing called Trenches. It's a World War I piece. Mm-hmm. So if anybody out there wants to produce that, I'm ready to turn that into a very exciting process in a film. But basically, you know, being that he was a 40-year vet in the film industry, and his cousin, of course, was Lou Costello, I had to ask him a lot of questions about his life and hanging out with Boris Karloff, some of my favorites, because when I was a kid, I used to watch all these films, you know, black and white, because there was only three channels on television back in the day. Remember that?
Oh, I do. I do. I'm looking at your birthday. We're practically, you know, the same age. So, yeah, those are the days. And those are the days you had to actually go up and change the channel manually, you know. That
Yes, you did. Yeah. You had to get up. Kids don't know this at all, so I'm going to describe it to them for a second briefly.
Yeah.
Kids, this is what you do. You get up. You want to change the channel. You have to go up, and there's a little knob that you switch. And there's three channels to pick up. Not very exciting. And my favorite was Shock Theater. When I was a kid, I used to watch Bela Lugosi, Boris Karloff, and of course, Mel Coleman knew all these people. He had lunch and dinner with them, and also Lou Costello and Bud Abbott were his, you know, friends. You know, he hung out on the set and things, so he told me some awesome stories that I'm telling you guys now because I worked with him for a while, and when I sent him the package, he was very excited because I sent him a very prepared package because I wanted to work with him. And he said, no one's ever sent me a package like that. And I was like, really? And then, we worked together, and he was like a father to me for a while there, and I wrote a couple other concepts with him. I can't talk about those, of course, because it's Hollywood.
Right.
But, you know, under his tutelage, I actually cut my teeth as a writer. On my first thing I wrote with him, I would send him hard copy, and he would basically send it back to me. And that's how I learned how to write screenplays. And then I only did screenplays because I wanted to be a better actor.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I was wanting to understand dialogue. I wrote something about Leonardo da Vinci and did a lot of research on Leonardo da Vinci. He was an amazing character. And I wrote a little film about him and his exploits. And I can't give too much away about the plot because it's original. But Mel helped me with that concept, and it was fun. It was so fun. So that's just one little vignette. I'm sure you got tons of questions, so I'll stop talking.
Go ahead and talk all you want. I want to actually just mention the fact you've been involved with creative types all your life. Your mother was very creative, and your father and stuff. Were you guys very close?
Yeah. Basically, my father, I was so close to him, it was unbelievable. My father was one of those kind of guys that I admired and looked up to. He was a definite free spirit, I should say. He was a pool player, and I'd love to do a film about those moments with him. And being a foster kid, and I'll go ahead and mention that to our viewers so they know my background and why I have done what I've done. I'm self-taught, and basically have learned everything I have at this point because of my drive to learn and also just my passion for the arts. My father was basically an individual that was a pool player. He liked to play the game like no man's business, and I used to hold the money for him. I might write a little movie called The Money Handler someday about my father as I sat there. And he gave me, I think this is why I'm an actor now, because he used to give me dialogue. I'll give you a couple scenarios. When I was a kid, one scenario was, he'd call me Peanut. And I was probably not even a foot and a half tall, could barely talk, and he was already teaching me dialogue. So as an actor, it's kind of funny where that actually came from, because he basically worked hard on me to make sure I had it perfect. So mm-hmm. He was a bus driver at the time, and basically he had me come up and he said, "Hey, Peanut," and he knew I was getting mad because he had taught me to be mad. That's not my name. My name's not Peanut. My name is James Robert Malone Jr. and you eat peanuts, and everybody would just crack up, and he just, I was like a little monkey. That was my first lines that I actually said to somebody in a rehearsed type format, and it was my audience. So thinking back, I hadn't thought of that actually in my whole life, actually, only because I'm talking to you today, I can kind of put the correlation together. It's funny how you see where your roots were, And my father was one of those kind of guys that I used to follow in his footsteps and go hunting. He taught me how to shoot a gun when I was at the same age of barely able to talk, and it knocked me on the ground the first time, and then I leaned into it and shot the can and hit it. Yeah. So, those are fun times with my pop. And go ahead.
I mean, I was just going to say, you mentioned hunting and stuff like this. Was this while you were living in Minnesota by any chance?
No, actually I did college. I was in the Navy for a bit, and I had a couple girlfriends while I was in the Navy because, I enjoy women and socializing. And I met a young lady that was actually nice to me. Being a Southern gentleman, she bought me a hamburger, and that blew my mind because most people in Minnesota are actually, when I was in Great Lakes, Illinois, that's where I went to the Navy, a lot of people were, just cold as ice, as you say. So it was kind of interesting. And I ran into her from Minnesota. Then I went to Minnesota, and now I'm segueing into my film career, which is kind of cool. I watched when I was in school, I can't remember what year it was, probably my sophomore year. I saw Stephen Sommers, the one that is the director of The Mummy and with Brendan Fraser. I watched him do his first film. So I think that was another reason why I was kind of interested in movie making, because I got to see it. He was cutting his teeth back then, and so I got to see him do his little bit in the like a mall. They were driving cars in the mall, and I said, nobody does that, He says, I know, it's so cool. And it was a little story, love story about football players, and he sat there and told me the scenario. And being that I grew up watching Bela Lugosi and all that jazz, I love films. I used to tell my father, the plot line before it would go down, and he would get frustrated and go, man, that's not cool, stop doing that, and I understood plot lines at an early young age. And my mother was very instrumental, because she basically gave me the encouragement that I needed, because when you're growing up, you need to have some kind of thing that keeps you going, so to speak. And I'm like the prodigal son. I've always traveled everywhere. That's why it's my hopefully this radio show will be kind of exciting and inspire some young youth to maybe, pursue acting as a sport. Because I look at it as a sport. I used to play soccer when I was a kid. So, I just look at this as another activity, a very competitive activity.
Yeah, actually, I was reading someplace, too, in high school, you had the record for goals per game, and that was in 1980 to 1982, and that record still stands. So
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it does. I had that on IMDb, actually. I was proud of that. I had 1.8 goals per game. I used to run 5 miles a day. I trained very hard. I ran a 5-minute mile. My foster dad was a track coach. I went to Westminster Christian Academy in Huntsville, Alabama. I was lucky to have a bunch of families in that church basically take me under their wing because I was a very rebellious young man, if you can imagine, you know, because my parents were, you know, type of people that were, you know, had problems, which we all do in life and can't cope. And, you know, basically we were taken out and put in foster homes. So that's one reason why I'm the individual that I am, and I'm very intense. And, you know, when people watch my movies, hopefully they'll see the pain and the passion and the love and the, you know, everything in my eyes and the way I do dialogue. But soccer-wise, yeah, it was fun. It was a way for me to release energy. I ran 5 miles every day training because I wanted to be the best, and I wanted to be a pro soccer player. But Danny Mitchell was a great little friend of mine. He used to he was from a Grissom, which was our competitive team that always was very good and beat our little tiny Christian school. Our Christian school, I graduated, I think, with 18 people. So you can imagine how small it was. So
very small, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I graduated with a class of 32, and they were broken up into two groups, the fast group and the slow groups. We had 16 and everything like that. But
right.
I really applaud your passion. I watched your acting reel today from Death and Taxes. And I don't want to go into it right now. I want to go ahead and actually break this up with a little bit of music. But if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Robert Malone here on At Home with Victoria. I want to thank everybody up in chat, Candy Knox, Gina from California, Guest 8200, Marby producing from Nashville, and Robert Malone from San Diego. So we're going to go to a little bit of tunes, and when we get back, we're going to talk about Robert's art career and talk about what it's like in the heart city of Los Angeles. So this is Brett Michaels with Let It Go. Don't go away. Back with Robert Malone.
I just let go inside the first time in a very long time, and now I pray for no consequence, but I won't hide this time, no, 'cause life begins right here. Place I always feared. Yeah, so breathe and let it go. Don't think so much anymore. I would let you never know. So breathe and let it go. Rising up. From the pool of a set stone moon,
facebook.com/BrettMichaels, BrettMichaels. Robert, when it comes to your artwork, too, I suggest you have to let it go as well. Some amazing work that you've done. Are you still drawing in ink right now?
Oh, thank you for that question. Actually, I took a break for a while because some of those pieces, and I appreciate the compliment, too, because I finally put them out to the world recently on Facebook, so thank Facebook for that. I hate to push somebody, but it's actually a nice utilization tool to get my work seen by people. And I haven't drawn for a few months because I've been working on a screenplay for a project in Cambodia that I'm going to be working on pretty soon, and very excited about that. My director is Brendan Moriarty. He has a great little project that we're going to be working on. And ink-wise, yeah, getting back to that, I basically was in college when I started drawing. I had my graphic design degree basically exuded me to learn about art in a different way. Thomas Strading was one of my art teachers. He was a wonderful person. He did etchings and engravings in metal. And I watched him for hours and would talk to him, and he influenced me so much so to pick up a pen and go try to draw a little bit more detail, because I fell in love with my art classes when I was in college. And it was fun. It was so fun. It was a new experience for me, because I took art classes in my private school with Brigitte Griggs. She was a German impressionist, so I had a few private classes with her when I was in sixth grade. So years later, I basically pushed the envelope, so to speak, and went to the next level, being that I could take all the art classes that I wanted to. Being that I was in the Navy, it afforded me the ability, when I got out due to a knee injury, I had a scholarship where I could take the classes and things like that. So I started with pencil drawings, of course, and then started doing the bone structures, learning about the what it meant to be an artist. And I had been self-taught before that, of course, but I really enjoyed this new level of expertise, and I wanted to push the envelope. Matter of fact, I sold paintings that were wet sometimes to one of my collectors, a young man, or an older fellow rather, that I had met in college through a friend of mine. And he would, you know, whenever I needed some money, $400, $300, I'd just run up there as quick as I could with a wet painting. And he'd go, "How much do you want this time?" And I found out later he was giving them away left and right. So people out there have my paintings. Matter of fact, I actually sold 5 paintings when I was in college, you know, because I put myself through college, and I'm the first Malone to ever go to college in my family's history, so I'm very proud of that. And I sold 5 paintings to a traveling circus guy that was in – he was just about to graduate, and he was going to run off with his dad with the circus, and I sold him one of my favorite ones, which was Michelangelo's he did the Sistine Chapel, and there was one of those paintings that I did from a book, a photograph of his book. And let me rephrase that. Basically, it was a painting that I did from a book, and I basically copied everything in it, even the fresco cracks that were in the photograph. And it was the Sibyl. There it is. I was searching for the name. It was called the Sibyl. I was stalling for time, so my brain caught up. But there's a lot of data in here, you know.
I understand, but,
Yeah. And basically the Sibyl was one of those pieces. It had a blue turban on. So my painting instructor was a surrealist, and I was more of a pragmatic copyist. And matter of fact, I could probably paint a dollar bill and make it look like a dollar bill. That's how detailed and how accurate I was. And in class, he was just like, "What are you doing? You can't copy the masters." And I was like, "Dude, I don't know where you're coming from, but you're obviously an idiot." And I told him to his face, "Of course you can copy the masters, because how do you think they learned back then?" And then, you know, because he couldn't paint. And I called him out in class, and he was very frustrated. Of course, he was about to, you know, have words with me later, and I said, listen, I'm going to paint what you want for your class, but on the side, I'm going to paint my paintings, what I want to do. And he said, that's fine.
Yeah.
You know, so I painted surrealist paintings for him, and then on the side, I sold so many paintings, it's not even funny, you know,
yeah.
to different people. And then later in our class, I learned how to do nudes and stuff. I remember my first time doing a nude, I was terrified. I looked at her head for about 5 minutes, I think, and the instructor said, move down, move down. Because, I mean, I went to a private Christian school, so it's like, what am I supposed to do here, right?
Well, that's just it. I mean, in Huntsville, Alabama, I mean, you're raised not to look at naked ladies. So, I mean,
I'm sure
that would be doing that. But after college, you actually traveled to Europe, which I found very good.
Did.
And,
yes,
you know, it's a big trip from Huntsville to Germany, buddy. So
actually,
what was that like for you?
Actually, I went to Denmark.
Oh, Denmark,
and
okay.
Denmark, yeah. And what it was I was working on a film project and with a young lady that was an ex-supermodel and basically had gone all the way across the country. It was my first road trip, by the way. Major road trip overseas, et cetera, had a passport and was ready to see the world. And it was fun. I did a lot of great things over there. I sat in the Queen's chair,
wow.
you know, in the Royal Theater. I got to meet all the best actors in Denmark. You know, and that was a wonderful experience. I highly recommend it. I basically traveled around. I think that was when it kind of really, when I did that solidified me wanting to be in the film business, because I looked at everything cinematically. Like, for instance, one individual took me up to a lighthouse, and it was by the ocean. You know, it was picturesque. It was like an Alfred Hitchcock movie, and I was sitting there. I let him go out first because I didn't know how windy it was or anything, and I didn't want to fall off, right?
Okay.
And he walked outside, and then I was right. There was a small, thin rail up there. I saw it from the ground, but when I went up there, it was like, you know, it was very picturesque. On the left, you see nothing but meadows. On the right, you see seascape and rocks. I mean, it was the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen, and I told myself someday I'm going to come back and do some type of movie there because it was so beautiful. You know, also I did some drawings there, a little bit of painting, had fun, even slept in, or not slept, but hung out in a German bunker that was, you know, by the ocean and just postulated on what it was like back in World War II to be inside that bunker, you know what I mean? And it was just interesting. And then the cuisine there was amazing. My friend had a nice chateau by the water. So it was Christmas time, so she had one of the biggest chefs in the country come in, and we had a feast. It was amazing. I mean, it was like the best thing on the planet. So you know, my travels have been very fun, and I can pull from that as an actor. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And
absolutely. The learning must be fantastic. When you said, I'm reading actually on IMDb. You slept in a German bunker just off the coast of Denmark for a few hours, listening to the waves crashing. Yeah, race back to the World War and what it must have been like. That, you know, I don't think. Well, I think basically you and I were a little bit old enough to actually understand what that level of war is. The level of war actually happening right now in Afghanistan is a little bit different, but still incredibly, what's the word for it? I'm sad. Is the only thing I can do. Those.
Well, it was a country that was taking advantage of everybody around it, you know, and, you know, invading at an enormous rate and, you know, basically, I know my history, so I don't want to go too terribly into that because that's not what the show's about.
Yeah, no,
but,
I understand.
You know, I really enjoyed my trip to Denmark, and, you know, basically, talking about the Shakespearean actors, let's talk about that a second.
Please.
Those guys were marvelous. I saw Faust in
Denmark.
Yeah, I sat there and watched the performance. It was amazing, you know, and it was the first time I saw nude actors running across the stage. It was beautiful. And, you know, even the chubby guy was beautiful, and it was elegance at its best. These are some of the best actors I've ever seen. They influenced me probably even more to become an actor because I saw what I saw and I was very impressed with the quality of their work. And it was actually, I actually almost understood what they were saying, even though it was another language, because of their gestures and their body language, and also because I've been studying people for years, because I've done acting in different ways through my life, you know, so it's a natural progression for me to fall into it and, you know, try to show the world another persona and characterizations and et cetera, et cetera. So Denmark was a very fun trip, and sitting in the Queen's chair was amazing. I sat in it for a moment. I probably shouldn't even say that live on the air or it or anybody, but I did it. I know I did because I was there. And I was probably the first American to ever do that. And it was a very exciting time for me. I was, you know, on an adventure. And that's
absolutely. And, you know, with your intensity, I find it so genuine. And see, where my mind goes, Robert, is that as you're sitting in the Queen's chair, I'm wondering, you know, the Queen has had to have broke wind, passed gas on this chair. I mean, you're actually touching actual DNA from generations. But it's one of those things that's fun. Actually, I'm going to go right back to the chat room and stuff. I have Kenny Knox from Delaware asking, what other mediums do you use? Do you use photography? This is regarding your artwork.
Oh, okay, good question. I have done some photography. I'm actually experimenting with photography in the near future. I've taken a lot of photographs. When I go to Cambodia, I'm going to experience photography because I've been here in San Diego, been fortunate enough to hang out with a photographer who is a marvelous artist. You know, basically I've been hanging out with him for about a week now. His name is Jean-Paul, and he's on my website or on Facebook. I have a link to him. His last name escapes me, and I'm looking for his card as we speak. There it is. Jean-Louis Husson, Husson. His website is www.photobyjl.com. He's a photographer. And it's funny that person asked about that, because running into Jean-Louis, he's been a photographer for many years, and, you know, he's amazing. He was showing me his portfolio, and that's just another art form, and I've actually fallen in love with photography now because of Jean-Louis. And I'm even going to put his number on the air, because if you need work in the LA area or even in San Diego, he's one of the best guys I've ever seen.
Please do. Marilyn, go ahead and type it up in chat, so go ahead and give us the digits.
It's 310-990-4636, and he's a good friend of mine. Matter of fact, I'm going to hang out with him after the show.
Oh, great. And, well, please say hi.
right?
So, sounds good.
Photography is something I want to play with,
Pardon me?
I said photography is something I want to play with.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
I think that just your eye alone will go ahead and capture some fantastic images. If you're just joining us, you're listening to At Home with Victoria. We're talking to Robert Malone here. We're going to go to a little bit more music. This is David Andrew Smith with Talk to Me. We're going to get back more with Robert Malone. Don't go away.
Talk to me. Thank you.
Robert, go ahead. Let's talk to me about working on The Green Mile with Tom Hanks. What was that experience like?
Oh, there's a story for you folks today. All right.
Okay, pull up your chair, people.
Sit down. We have a fun moment in time. Yeah, you have to imagine, I'm a little kid from Huntsville, Alabama. Basically, I've seen Tom Hanks in tons of movies. Even when I was a freshman in college, I saw him do that Money Pit, where he fell in the house and all that stuff, and that was one of his first films. And I said, that guy's going to be a star. And then years later, I met him. So you can imagine how my mind raced when I got the opportunity to work on The Green Mile. I'll backtrack. Basically, I was a stand-in on that project, and also I did some stand-in work for Gary Sinise, Doug Hutchison, Barry Pepper, and a couple other actors. We were all about the same height, so I was lucky enough to be the stand-in for everybody. So I worked the entire show, and watching Tom Hanks was amazing. There was a time where he went on the Green Mile. He was hiding behind a facade, which is basically the front of a building that is built around the house to make it look vintage in that time period, to make it aged, because the house obviously was more modern. So behind that facade sat Robert Malone in a couch waiting for Tom Hanks, because I knew in advance, where is he going to hide? Where is he going to be to walk out to the shot? He was going to be back there in that room. So I wanted to be there in that moment in time. So Tom Hanks and myself were in a room together. And needless to say, it was luxurious for me. Tom Hanks knew I was, like, watching him. And I was pretending to read a book. So, you know, that was my scenario. When I worked on the Untamed Heart with Christian Slater back in the day, it was my first film. I read a book on that, and I learned so much from the business, because I actually wasn't reading the book. I was paying attention to everything around me, because I wanted to learn. I had a knowledge for the film business and how it's better. But to sit there and have people just conversate and just pick up on the language and how they thought and how they spoke to each other. So, you know, it was somebody told me that was a trick to do, and I did it. And so when I was on The Green Mile, I'm reading my book as usual, because I didn't want to appear nervous or anything. I had my prop, and I just sat there, and then I looked up at him, and then he didn't look at me because he's about to go do his bit. But there was a moment in time where I got to breathe the same air with Tom Hanks, and it was a wonderful experience. When he went out to do the scene, you know, I had stood in the same chair that he's talking to Gary Sinise. So I was sitting in that chair doing the lighting bit for Gary Sinise. I saw Gary run by and do his day bit, they call it, when you come in for a day, the day of day shoot. So I didn't get a chance to talk to him, and I barely had a chance to talk to Tom Hanks. But I was very nervous. It was my first time talking to a celebrity, and I was going to do it. And I had to have an angle. My angle was a Halloween card. It was Halloween time. So my angle was to put on there, Tom, thanks for the opportunity from all us actors. That was my angle. So I basically, Tom Hanks and Bonnie Hunt were sitting there on, the director's chairs having a conversation. And I was, like, trying to get the courage up. I remember this like it was a second ago. It was quite an experience to get up the courage just to go talk to him, because that's Tom Hanks. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
And it was fun. I walked up to him, and Bonnie Hunt she looked past Tom and looked at me like, who are you and why are you here? But I'm an actor. That's who I am.
Absolutely.
And that's why I'm there. I'm cutting my teeth, just like you did many years ago. So I think that's another thing that's pushed me, was the look she gave me. Because, I'm not trying to delineate Bonnie Hunt. She's a wonderful actress, but I had interrupted her. And, people were in a conversation, and you don't want to be interrupted because you're trying to talk. But I didn't know when to get in, because it's very seldom that he's sitting in a chair out in the open like that. So it was a one-shot deal. And I was waiting for a polite moment, but there was none, because, they're talking back and forth. So I just went for it, knowing that I was going to get the look and everything else. But it was fun. Tom looks at the card, and he didn't even read the card. Tom Hanks flips the card over, and he reads, "So you're Robert Malone?" And I said, "Yes, sir, I am. And it's a pleasure meeting you, Mr. Hanks." He says, "It's nice to meet you, too," you know. And that's how I met Tom Hanks, and I got to watch him, you know. You can't get a better teacher, you know. When you watch the best like that, that's an amazing experience. And so I recommend stand-in work for all actors, because if you can get it, it's the best work you can get. It's better than an extra. You treat it better as an actor. You're respected. And then also you get to learn. You actually get to, you know, have conversations with the actors. So that's the Tom Hanks work.
Yeah, no, I haven't had the pleasure of meeting Tom and his wife, but a good friend of mine, Erin Brown, you should check her out at erinbrowntv.com. She does On the Street. It's called Hot on the Red Carpet with Erin Brown, and she walks around Hollywood with a red bath mat, and that's her red carpet, and she interviewed Tom Hanks and his wife at a Greek festival, and I adore her because she is so ballsy. She doesn't care who anybody is.
Right.
And afterwards, you know, I watched it, and she sent it to me, and I phoned her back, and I said, "You know what?" I says, granted, you know, she's in L.A., so she's got the rights to some of the A-list celebrities. I says, "Were you nervous doing that?" She says, "You know what? He was the nicest guy to approach, to talk to, very, very down to earth." Would you equate that experience as being true?
I do. Matter of fact, he was so humorous. You know, he was cutting up, and, you know, the thing is, I didn't know how to continue the conversation because it was my first time talking to somebody that I admired for so many years. Of course, now, ever since then, I have friends like Cleisha Carradine, Sally Kirkland, and Mariah Carradine are some friends of mine. You know, I have some celebrity friends, and of course, I've gotten over my bashfulness. And, you know, it was like my first time, you know, cutting my teeth, so to speak. But Tom was, like, so generous with his time, and he was just... He was superbly funny. I've never seen anybody just so jovial, and he made me laugh, and I was terrified inside. But I mean, you know, it was a moment in time where I had to cross over and become a real actor, you know, because that was what I was doing. And then once I got over that fear, because let me say this to actors, I'm going to teach acting for a second, because I am an enhancement coach and also an instructor. I'm a Meisner actor by trade, most like Brando, and also James Dean. Matter of fact, some people have equalitated my work to similarities to those people. I'm only mentioning that because that's what they said, and you can check it out. It's on my Facebook. I mean, people are very generous with my work, and I'm just glad that they like it. And you know, acting. What I wanted to say is it's fear driven. If you can get over your fear of whatever it is as an actor, whether it be that you have a problem with dialogue, whether it's working with another actor, working with an A-lister actor, whatever, what you have to do is you have to get over the fear quantitative problem in your head first.
Mm-hmm.
Approach your fear, get over the hump, and then do the work, you know? And it's like I could do a scene with Tom Hanks right now because I'm a different guy because I've been in the business since 92. You know what I mean? And Green Mile was the second film that I worked on, major motion picture. So Untamed Heart, touching on that, that was my first film with Christian Slater. I was the body double for him. I was in college, and basically what happened was I was asking some people in my school, my acting coach, I took an acting class with him, and he's like, "My God, man, you've got to be an actor because, you know, you're just amazing, blah, blah, blah." I was like, "Why is this guy talking like this? I mean, you know, is he trying to make me pay for classes or something?" I was like, "What is this all about?" You know, but what I had done by mistake, because I found out years later what I was doing, my mistake was actually how actors did it. I was pausing. Even my communication today, I talk with pauses like in a movie. Because I've taught myself that. And as actors, if anything, if you want to learn acting, listen to the way I talk, especially right now, because I'm pausing with reflection, and I'm pausing, you know, basically with, you know, training. That's what it is. It's Meisner training. Emotion memory is very important for me, you know. So my instructor was Gene Hammons and Bruce Boucher before going – into the movie bit, I'll regress back just for a moment and talk about my training. because it was a very exciting time. I wanted to learn about acting, and this is before I will come back to that moment in time where I was a second ago. I haven't forgot where I'm at, but I want to regress back so that kids out here will understand where I came from as an actor. Being that I was a foster kid, I had shut down my valves as an actor. As my emotions. Let me rephrase that. I shut down my emotions as an actor. So when I took this first acting class, my emotions were not there. I had learned how to not cry because of, the growing through foster homes and stuff like that. I was in several of those. So, it was a up and down hill battle for me mentally just to get through those. But I think that's why I'm a better actor today, because I learned how to work with people on a different way. Because when I had my classes with Jean Hammonds and Bruce Boucher, first thing she taught me was emotion memory and how to cry, because it's obviously I didn't know how to cry. She could tell I didn't want to get upset. And she was pushing me, trying to get me to get emotional. And I was like, actually almost yelling at her. And I thank her to this day, because she got me over that fear. That's what stopped me from being an actor. That fear of letting go of my emotions and things like that. So Jean Hammonds hopefully she's still in Huntsville, Alabama. I haven't heard from her in years, but Bruce had passed away, and they were life partners up in New York. They taught Tom Berenger.
Really?
Al Pacino. Wow. Yeah, Al Pacino and other people like that, from New York. So she moved to Huntsville, Alabama. When I came down from my college, I just happened to run into him, because right after Untamed Heart, I wanted to go straight into making movies and learn about it. So I was on my road trip down to Florida, but my engine overheated in my car, and I was barely got home to Huntsville. So then I recapitulated my training, because I figured I needed some training, and I looked on the lo and behold, it was a very spiritual thing. There was Jean Hammonds on a newspaper, in the newspaper. There I saw her. And I was like, man, this is like fate or what? I don't know what this is, but, this is crazy. So I called her up, and I spent a year with her, and she taught me how to be a better actor. And training is everything, especially with the Meisner technique.
Right.
Brando was very famous for that. And James Dean, he was so passionate. And,
great, great actors. I think the best thing to determine a great actor from a mediocre actor is not only acting but reacting, and you have to be quiet and able to go ahead and take that in and everything. But I just want to go ahead and steer off a little bit and just the world is so small, Robert. I'm up here in Delaware. I was talking with a good friend of mine in Los Angeles and stuff who lives just off Venice Road, and he was saying, what are you doing tonight and stuff? I said, well, I have the show tonight and everything. He says, who do you have on? I says, Robert Malone. He says, Robert Malone? He says, I think I saw his signature in Wet Cement on, like, North Venice Road.
Oh, my God, he did.
I thought, how hilarious. So tell us about that.
That's a good story. Basically, what happened was, I'm learning how to surf, so I go to Venice a lot, and I know that I'm an actor, and I can't get into Hollywood yet. Wouldn't put my signature down in the cement, and I was walking along, and a musician and myself were like passing in time, and I said, "Look, the cement's wet. We got to sign this," and I went, "Yeah." He goes, are you sure we should do this? I said, yeah, why not?
Because, love it.
Because I'm an artist. I travel through life. If nothing else, my signature is in Venice on that concrete. And it's funny that guy actually saw that. That's amazing. And
it was hilarious because we talk frequently, but for him to go ahead and just mention it out of the blue, it was really, again, small world.
That's surreal. That is surreal. That's the odds of that, too. Yeah, because I thought that was a quiet spot. Now the world's going to know about it.
Absolutely. If you're just listening, tuning in, we're listening to Robert Malone on Home of Victoria. We're going to go back to some music. This is Drew Stevens with Overboard. When we get back, much more with Robert Malone. Don't go away.
not sure where I've been. Sometimes I'm somewhere else. Sometimes I just pretend. I'm here in the rain. I'm keeping up with you.
I was watching your acting reel today, and I think it was Death and Taxes. Incredibly powerful performance where you cut off your finger, and I had to actually close my eyes, buddy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Actually, I have a new demo reel out that I've done. It's cut into a lot of cool stuff. It's more fresh and more vibrant. It's on IMDb, Robert Malone number one.
Okay.
I'd love to have people check that out. That's very exciting. You know, it's one of those things where, I'm I'm like always trying to do cutting edge stuff. I love the technology today. It's like amazing, you know. So I'm very excited about the future of cinema too. I like James Cameron, what he's been doing with pushing the envelope as an actor. I'm very excited. I'd love to work with that guy down the road. I love his technology and the way he thinks.
Absolutely. Robert, we're from the same generation. What is your take on social media, the power of social media right now? I know you're on Facebook and everything, but
sure.
a lot of people that I'm involved with right now are doing a lot of independent films. Now you can go ahead and get fundraising from Kickstarter, Indiegogo. You can raise your funds yourself, make everything happen.
Yep.
Do you find that to be absolutely beneficial to the future of cinema?
Well, I think for independent artists, which because of the technology with the MacBook and also the 7D and the advances of the Panasonic cameras, what we've got now is a new flux of young filmmakers that can basically put together a project very inexpensively, which is amazing compared to yesterday, a 35mm. Very expensive way of processing, and then also, turning it into film with a telesign. I mean, those things are, even the terminology I'm using, kids today don't even, it's like passé. Yeah. It's like they don't even know the history of film like I do. I mean, so the technology today is spot on, and that's my buzzword, so don't anybody steal that one. That's a Malone thing. It's spot on, and I think that, with the applications that we have, in the future, filmmaking is going to be very exciting, and I'm looking forward to the potential of working with all those new young filmmakers out there, because Brendan Moriarty is only 23 years old. He's an individual that I ran into on Facebook, the social media. I was working with somebody that knew him, and then I saw that he was doing a film, and I wanted to push it on my site, because I like helping other artists. That's my motif, so to speak. I love pushing other people that are talented. I heard him on a radio show similar to this one that we're doing. That's why I'm so excited, and I'm honored to be on your show.
Thank you.
I wouldn't be in Los Angeles unless I had I'd listened to this kid's brain on the radio and, fell in love with his passion. He's a very David Lean type of filmmaker. His first film, The Road to Freedom, is amazing. And, basically it's one of those type of films about Sean Flynn, who is Errol Flynn's son. I helped, do the marketing of it. I ran around with posters. Check this out. This is a fun little moment in time. I took posters that Brendan had produced, and I put them on the walls, the wooden walls, where Hollywood has all its, top blockbusters, right?
Right.
I'm like going up to these walls off of La Brea in Washington, right there in a corner. Now people know exactly where I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
There was a nice wall there that was wooden where they always put all the film posters up there, and I said, what a beautiful spot for Brendan's posters. So my rebellious Irish self went over there and started plastering as many posters as I could up there with tape, no less. And it was not a fast process, and I was terrified, but because I can only imagine how much the fine would be. But I wanted to push and produce and get his project out there. And it was a fun moment in time, And I have pictures of it on Facebook and all that jazz, and it was fun, very exciting times helping him, get the word out about his film, his first film.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe in this young man. That's why I'm working with him, because he's got a great eye, similar to the Bridge of a River Kwai.
Right.
His cinematic vision is amazing.
Point of view, yeah.
Yeah, his point of view. And it's just amazing. His camera dolly shots, high camera, crane shots and things like that in Cambodia. For being 1920 when he did that, he was, I think, 20 years old. I was blown away by what I saw, and I actually have one of the original cuts of it. I'm probably the only person on the planet that has it, and I'm honored to have it, and I'm honored to be working with him in the future. So that's the future of filmmaking. There's a lot of opportunities.
Absolutely, and what I find fascinating is that, again, with the fundraising of Indiegogo and Kickstarter and stuff, that most has done in-house. Most is done at their kitchen table, the computers nowadays and stuff. You know what, buddy? I want to introduce you to a good friend of mine, Steve Silverman. He is a fantastic filmmaker, was the a big wig at Fox, but now he has a couple web series that are award-winning. He's funny as hell. Hell, but brilliant. Right. So I'm going to go ahead and put you two together.
No problem.
903, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to At Home with Victoria with Robert Malone. Robert, we're running out of time here. You're working, what are you writing now? You're writing a screenplay, or what is it that you're doing in San Diego right now?
Yeah, actually, I'm taking a break from the acting world for a moment before I shoot off to Cambodia to work on this piece that I'm doing with Brendan Moriarty. So yeah, that's what I'm working on. I can't really talk much about it because it's been hush hush. Basically, you know, what I have been doing is working on my memoirs actually in San Diego. I took a moment and reflected over the last year of coming to LA, and you know, I can touch briefly on that for a second if you like. Do you have any questions or anything or what?
Pardon me?
Do you have any big questions or anything that you that the
Well, let's go back to chat and stuff. Everybody else is just basically saying how much they're enjoying the interview. Candy Knox actually is hitting you up privately and stuff. She just thinks that you are the bee's knees, so to speak. But Robert, it's such a thrill. And I'm really thrilled to go ahead and talk to you after this, too, because you mentioned Sally Kirkland. I'm a huge, huge love of Sally Kirkland. I saw her on, I think it was YouTube, she was being interviewed by, she's in a new film right now or something like that, coming out with a couple unknown people, and she was so gracious. But I still love Sally because Sally to me is an actress's actress, so to speak. I mean, she really has played everything. She's playing one of the best character actresses I think I've ever seen. I love her for her sideways curly hairdo, and but now the film that I or the clip that I saw her in, her head was all pulled back. She's very, very serious. So you're good friends with Sally, is that correct?
That is correct. Actually, I met her on Facebook. Once again, the utilization of the social interaction media that we have out here today. I met her in Nashville, Tennessee, while I was cutting my teeth as an actor and also my budding screenwriter. I'm a script consultant now, by the way. So I would talk to Sally Kirkland late at night because she is up late at night, you know, in L.A., not sleeping. And we chatted back and forth, And then eventually I met her in person. And then I told her I was reading Brando, one of his autobiographies. Matter of fact, I have one that I'm reading today. It's kind of apropos that I mentioned that because I love his work, and I aspire to do such type of examples of capturing the humanity, the pain, the anguish. And Sally Kirkland was having some personal things going on with her dog. And she wanted something, you know, to keep her busy. And I said, well, you can, I think she said, can I borrow your Brando book? I don't even think I mentioned it or something like that. And I said, yeah, sure. So I went over and actually I had coffee with her once before and then just to meet her. And then the next time she said, I need your Brando book. So I said, no problem, Sally. So she had it probably about 6 months, never worried about it because I know it's in good hands. And you know, the autobiography was very inspirational to me because we have a lot of similarities, you know, in our background, you know.
Right.
I think, and I fell in love with his characterization of who he was as a person and how his pain actually showed on screen, and I love talking to Sally on the internet, so I wanted to meet her.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, eventually when I came to LA, we did meet, and it was a fun experience, and one of the things she taught me was, because I was so nervous a little bit when I first met her, I was just rambling 1,000 miles an hour, because this is Sally Kirkland, and I've loved her work for years, and she said, just be quiet. 5 minutes, be quiet. Be still. Be still. Don't ramble. And I went, okay, that's cool. And then I just sat there, and then I knew what she was doing. She was looking at me like I was an actor doing a scene with no dialogue. Just like, you know, the old talkies back in the day.
Yeah.
And, you know, she taught me more in that 5 minutes because she said, no, that was interesting because I was playing with my cup because I wanted to I knew she was looking at me cinematically, so then I became the actor right there on the spot. It was a quiet training moment with Sally Kirkland, and it was amazing. And she was very gracious with her time. And after observing me, she said, "Now that was very interesting. You stirring that ice in your cup was very interesting. And you playing with your cake and all that was very, you know, these are things you have to remember. It's not always about the dialogue," is what she was saying between the lines, because, you know, intelligence is important as an actor, but you also have to have business, is what we call it. So when I do my scenes now, I will always remember that little training that she gave me, which was amazing, of the business of acting. In other words, looking like you're doing something while you're doing your scene. It's not just dialogue. You have to be believable in the moment. And that was a lesson, 5 minutes with Sally Kirkland.
Wow, that would have been absolutely stunning to witness. And, you know, I think most people find it intimidating to go ahead and have someone observe everything you're doing, but actors are fantastic at that. They're paying attention to absolutely everything, every frame. I'm a big stickler. I love watching films and watching inconsistency in editing, especially when it comes to where the glass was, how much the sandwich was eaten, and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it must have been thrilling to meet her. You go ahead and hit her up. I would love to go ahead and have a good hour with her. You can come back with her, too. Absolutely. I'd love to interview the lady.
I'll talk to her and see if she's willing to do that. That shouldn't be a problem. I'll try to put her in touch with you guys, because she's an amazing human being, and she's very spiritual, and I enjoy her as a human being. I've never met anybody so gracious with their time, you know.
Yeah.
And I've also met Calista Carradine. I was working with her, and I went to the John Barrymore studio. I was basically going there to observe the actors, because I wanted to see what kind of level we had in talent-wise in L.A. And I was very impressed with the John Barrymore studio. Folks, go check him out. He is amazing, absolutely amazing instructor. I just happened to see Calista Carradine. She was preparing for a showcase, and I just basically worked with her for a few weeks, getting her prepared for her first showcase that she hadn't. She hadn't acted in about 10 years, I believe. So she was a singer primarily for the last 10 years. And, folks, she's David Carradine's daughter. That's who she is.
Stunning.
And it was amazing just watching her work. She pushed me. I pushed her. Rehearsal times out in the this one little location. We were at a friend's place. Her name is I'll just not mention that name. But, anyway, it was a little place where we rehearsed. This person thinks she's the great-grandfather of Errol Flynn. That's why I don't want to mention her name, because I don't know if it's true or not. But, you know, Hollywood's full of all kinds of mysterious people. So, and I've run into some very cool people. And Calista Carradine basically her scene was very intense. So I had to get her enraged, because I'm an acting coach, and I'm kind of, you know, coaching her a little bit, and she's coaching me. We're both learning from each other, right? And then, you know, the scene was very heavy, and it was fun doing the rehearsal with her. She's a very dynamic actor. Folks, you've got to put her in some films today, you know, because that's a talent you don't want to let go, because it's genetics. She has the genetics for acting, and it was marvelous to work with her. It was an honor, actually, and I would do it again in a hot second. If somebody wants to put a movie together and we're in it, I'm there. So, you know, because she was great to work with. And, you know, I've had some fun experiences since I've been in Hollywood. You know, I've walked along Hollywood going up to the, you know, where the hands are, the handprints. And as an actor, it's kind of cool to walk amongst the people and listen to their adoration of other actors, because that pushes me that much harder, because I want to be an actor that puts something out there that people fall in love with. That's why I went into acting as an artist, because I loved the cinema. Even as a child, I watched Bela Lugosi, et cetera, et cetera. Always studied film. So later in college, I got an opportunity to basically work on a film on Tim Hart. I went into the film. Jos Volcano was the director of photography. He did Das Boots and Starship Troopers and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, Jos Volcano was the best cinematographer on the planet. And guess who the director was? Tony Bill.
Really?
Tony
Wow.
Bill, producer of The Sting. My first movie when I was in fourth grade, my first adult film was The Sting. It's amazing how my life has just been secular, where I've run into people that I admired when I was a kid. I learned The Sting on the piano because of that movie. So when I finally got to work with this guy, it was amazing to watch. And that's why I fell in love with filmmaking, to be honest, because of Tony Bill. Mm-hmm. I watched his eyes when he directed and when he did a take with Christian Slater and Marissa Tomei and Rosie Perez. By the way, Rosie Perez, that was her first film she cut.
Yeah.
She was running around nervous and in cussing in every other scene. Tony was like going, "Stop it. Stop it, Rosie. You can't cuss because, I mean, it's a tape. We might be able to use something." She's like, "Oh, okay, sorry. F, you know, I'm sorry. F, I'm sorry."
And it goes, "Sorry, homie."
Yeah. And it was like, it was beautiful to watch Tony Bill, you know, because that's how I fell in love with filmmaking. When I worked on a major motion picture for my first project, I was blessed. I was lucky. It was a very, very, very fun project. And watching Christian Slater. I was his body double in one scene where I showed him how to do a stunt in the back of the alley. There was a stunt. I worked with the stunt coordinators on a knife bit, we call it. You know, basically rehearsed a fighting sequence, and then we showed it to Christian, and then he did it from what we rehearsed. So I was given some great opportunities, and then Tony Bill put me in Christian Slater's outfit. And then shot me from the neck down because he wanted me to get over the fear of being in front of the camera, I felt. Because he knew I was a little terrified at first. And I actually pulled Tony aside one day. I said, "Tony, you think I should be an actor?" He said, "Yeah, I think you should." And because he said that, I never forgot that. And I've run into so many great artists over the years, and it's been a wonderful experience. And I look forward to some more wonderful experiences in the future because it's a dynamic world, acting is, and I love acting. I love doing comedy too. I've written some comedy bits, you know. I've written about 5 screenplays that I'd love to have somebody look at because I've written things historically, World War One, World War Two, Leonardo da Vinci, you know, just and also a lost piece that Robert Louis Stevenson wrote. It was The Imp. Mel Coleman.
Oh, yeah, right.
He wrote The Imp is basically a story about a devil in the bottle. So I turned that into a Treasure Island type story. Now, if somebody hears this over the radio and steals it, I know where it came from. But I don't think they wrote it from my viewpoint, you know, because I wrote it from the eyes of the guy that has the bottle. And you have to sell the bottle for less than you bought it. Because if you don't, you get possessed by the devil. And back in the day, I think that was kind of like a taboo thing, and that's why they didn't publish it and turn it into a book. But it's a short story. You can look it up on the internet, kids, and it's called The Imp. And I turned that into a full feature, and I look forward to doing maybe some of these projects with some people in the future because I've written some things for kids to really fall in love with, and they're very awesome stories, and I really am impressed with the technology out there, and it's finally caught up to what I wrote because, you know, when I wrote these right out of college, the technology wasn't there yet to pull off some of the cinematography and the tricks that I wrote into the films. So I'm glad that finally James Cameron and people like him have pushed the envelope with technology so that, you know, we can do these projects that I've written. And the Leonardo da Vinci thing is one of those projects that you know, I was on a microphone, talking into a microphone, pretending I was Leonardo da Vinci, you know, doing the dialogue, and it was spot on. It was just it was a magical moment as an artist to do something like that. I was looking up the moon, and I was like pretending I was in this apparatus that he has. I can't divulge because it will give away the plot, and I don't want anybody stealing this idea. But basically, it was a magical moment where I'm looking up at the moon, and I had read a full journal of Leonardo da Vinci, so I got his mindset of where he was as an artisan, and I was basically on an adventure with this screenplay, and it's a very cool thing. Indiana Jones meets something else, and I can't say because it'll give away the plot, but okay. It's a fun story, and you know, I'm looking forward to possibly putting that out there too, because I think kids, these smash bang, you know, Spider-Man, they're all great films, but I want to write something that Jules Verne would be proud of. You know, that's what I wrote, some things that are like that. So the kids go pick up a book, and they read the book, and they go, "Wow, did that happen? Did that happen about Leonardo da Vinci?
Well, and also they would pick up the book and read it, and then they would pick up the book again and read it, and then they pick up a book the book again in its adult and read it. I mean, that's the timeless essence I think you're going for, and
exactly.
quite frankly, I will be honest with you, Rob, this has been my magical moment speaking with you. We're running out of time here, but I do want to thank you for being so candid and so absolutely out there today, and thank you for granting us this interview, buddy. It's an absolute pleasure to chat with you, and we're going to become a good friend. Friend me on Facebook. You didn't friend me back yet, so I'm waiting for you to go
ahead
and friend me.
I haven't. I've had a busy day today with my friend. You know, my French photographer kept talking. I was, like, talking to him for 2 hours, man, before the show. you know, so I was like, I saw it, but I didn't have a chance to get to it. Definitely.
No worries.
I'm
totally just teasing. But Robert, you're on Facebook. Again, it's facebook.com/Robert Malone, M-A-L-O-N-E. Go ahead and check him out there. Any other social media sites you want? Are you on Twitter? Are you a Twitterer?
Not yet. My career hasn't advanced to the point where I would want to even worry about Twitter.
It's overrated,
social media.
Robert.
Well, you know, I like Facebook just because of the people I've met all over the world. I'm also on IMDb, Robert Malone, number one. That's my credits. I'm the first one on there. I did that years ago. I the social media is amazing. I'll probably Twitter more when I have stuff to talk about on a bigger scale. Mm-hmm. You know, I hope my career progresses down the road, and I'm looking forward to having more interviews. And that's why I gave this interview, because it was my first one. I've held in these stories for years, and I've been quiet for years because I wanted to wait till I got to California, and I wanted to wait till I had something to talk about, as per se. And it was kind of a spiritual thing where your friend, it's Marilyn, I believe, right?
Marilyn, yeah.
Yeah, Marilyn contacted me out of the blue, and it was such timing because I was actually going to work on this project with my buddy Brendan Moriarty, the David Lean type director, and I was very excited, and I was like, well, how fortuitous that I'm having a radio show when I'm actually having a major project about to be launched in probably summertime. It's called. I'll let you wait on that. I'm not gonna. My director didn't want me to put everything out there yet. But look for it. It's gonna be coming out in June, and my first major project with this director. And I look forward to doing more things with him because I love his intelligence. Mm-hmm. And I love the young filmmakers out there, and I'd love to work with anybody in their 20s or 30s, even 40s, 50s, because they're different cinematic eyes, and that's
true.
The beauty of filmmaking. You know, everybody has a different viewpoint, and their POV is totally different, and each director is totally different. So I'm looking forward to that.
Well, I'm looking forward to having you back on the show, so please understand that At Home with Victoria is your home, too, so come on back when the film is made, and if you got anything else down the pipeline, go ahead and shoot me a message, buddy. You're always welcome back.
Sure.
Please.
I appreciate it. Thank you for the opportunity today, and it'll probably be my last interview for a couple years because I'm going to be quiet. I don't really like to do interviews, but I've really connected with Marilyn, and I felt that this was an opportunity and time to share with the world from an artist's viewpoint. So I appreciate the opportunity.
Buddy, it's my pleasure, seriously. So take that to the bank and roll that up and smoke it, buddy. But
thanks,
yeah,
Michael.
Huge thanks
awesome
again, buddy.
Yeah.
Ditto. It's a thrill to meet you. Next time you meet Victoria, too. She was sick tonight, but you'll love her as well. But again, huge success and happy holidays from Candy Knox in Delaware. She's typing that in the chat room like she's on fire. So, I mean, happy holidays, Robert.
Appreciate that, Candy. I appreciate that. Yeah, that's awesome. And thanks for the fans out there, too. I can't do what I do without fans. And
absolutely.
I appreciate everybody in the future watching my films and hopefully falling in love with my characters that I develop. That's the beauty of the art form. And I look forward to making people fall in love with the stories that we're going to try to tell.
Fantastic. Can't wait to talk to you again. And seriously, you know, hit me up when you have stuff coming down. We're always here for you.
I'll definitely call you after the interview.
Thank you, buddy. Give me 6 minutes. No worries. We'll talk to you soon, Robert. Take care.
Take care, and thanks for the show.
My pleasure. Take care. Wow, listening to Robert Malone, fantastic, the stories this man has. Want to thank everybody up in chat, Candy Knox. See, I gave you your plugs, Candy. Dynamic Daphne, guest 8200. Marby, thanks for producing a fantastic show and introducing me physically to Robert Malone. And Robert Malone is actually up in chat. So want to make mention, actually, our big Christmas show is coming up next Thursday, the 20th. There's a couple surprises coming up, a couple new songs from people, and we're just going to sit and have a good time. We're going to be benefiting Angels for Soldiers and Lisa Spangler Brown will be with us as well. So we're going to close the show with a little bit of music. This is Preston Leatherman with Feel This Way. I want to thank everybody for joining for At Home with Victoria. I am Michael Kay. Have a good night.
I'll never want to feel this way again. Pushing out a toilet paper thin. I'll never want to feel this way again. Broken out of sign of karma trend. When I get too deep, I get kicked under my feet. And you go into my sky.
Podcast and like us on Facebook. I'm Shelly Rand, musician and announcer for At Home with Victoria. Download my CD on iTunes and Amazon and friend me on Facebook.